welcome to Rhythm and Brews. I'm joined today by the biggest ska fan that I know. He's here today to profile his all-time favorite ska bands. Psyched to welcome back to the show, Rafi Karigian.
What's up?
Rafi, you are a lover of many things, of your career, your friends, your wife, your daughter. But I think more than any of those trivial things, your love of ska eclipses them all. Would you say that's true?
I'd say that was once upon a time maybe true, but certainly not anymore. I think the kid probably did it for me, but everything up to that point. Well, I guess I should say my wife too, but.
But obviously I'm kidding there. But you have been, I think, the biggest proponent of ska in my life for as long as I can remember. We've been in bands for years. Well, I just mean like even when we were in punk bands, like you were always wanting to pull in a ska influence and have the ska bass lines that you were good at. And you were, we talked, I'm sure at some point on one of the episodes you've been on about the band The Discordants, the ska band, like really the first like serious band that you were in. So it's definitely been a big part of your life.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, the whole part about bass too, like that's absolutely true. I don't think if it wasn't for ska, I'd probably just be playing straight, like, you know, whatever, just straight notes and without any versatility at all. Yeah. So definitely helped.
So how and why did you first get into, or I guess how and when did you first get into ska music?
Yeah. So probably, I mean, it really kind of started with my whole blossoming into music in general. Ska was really part of the first wave for me of jumping into, you know, more creative types of music that I actually liked and had a mind of my own for. So, you know, with pop punk, it kind of went from there. One of the first bands that I liked, which I've talked about on a previous episode or two, was Five Iron Frenzy, which sort of had very, very pop punk feels. Like I have them on my teaser here. I have them on my list, but it was actually kind of funny because like 90% of their stuff isn't your straight ska. It's just ska in the sense that it has horns, but outside of that, it's, you know, straight rock. So, so that really helped kind of go different directions. But aside from that, my brother was big into punk, and one of the bands that he really liked that I started liking very early on, which was Operation Ivy. I think there's a lot of debate into, you know, were they sort of the fathers of modern pop punk or the fathers of modern ska, you know, whatever the case is. But they had a huge piece in that as well. So
sure.
Nice.
Well, and I think there definitely was a transition that a lot of these bands went through where at first they were that really traditional blend of ska and punk, and eventually a lot of them just were like, fuck it, we're punk with horns.
Exactly, you're right. you're so true. Yeah.
And even for bands that started out that way, like Less Than Jake, you could say that about Real Big Fish. Half the bands we're going to talk about today.
Exactly.
So.
Yep.
So we always start with BYOB. You want to talk about the beer you brought and why?
Yeah, sure. So I'll preface by saying it was very, very difficult to tie a beer to ska. However, with that said, there's this one thing that I can think of. So I have Yingling. It's not very, you know, it's not very creative or anything like that. It's a pretty standard beer, but the reason I'm doing that, and I actually have a different beer as a backup here, but I'm going to start with this. Back in college, I used to have a group of friends that we all loved ska, like, you know, I mean all those different types of music, but ska was a big piece. And we went down to Philadelphia on spring break one year to visit one of our friends' friends. And it was this big group of people, like it was almost like a small community of like ska lovers. And like, I mean, like it was a huge ska scene that they were a part of. And you had that, like, we got so into ska in that one week that we were there. Not that I hadn't been before, but just like it took it to a next level. And so while we were down there, the drink of choice, obviously in Philadelphia, was Yingling. So I remember having a bunch down there with this group of people who love ska. So
nice.
Yeah.
What's your backup one?
My backup one is just because I have it and I want to drink it, and I haven't been able to get into one of these yet this year. But it's Berkshire Brewing Company Steel Rail. It's one of my favorite beers, so it's just going to be there, sitting there waiting and taunting me.
Right on. Well, so I actually brought two beers today. The first is Kill Your Idols Tropical by Idle Hands Brewing. It's got kind of a tropical theme going on, obviously, on the can art, but also in the flavor composition. I think it's brewed with mangoes, passion fruit, and guava. And even though most of the bands we're going to talk about today are like associated with the third wave of ska or ska punk, ska has its origins in Jamaica in like the 1950s, and it's like the precursor of reggae and a bunch of other music genres we associate with Jamaica and the Caribbean now. So I thought having a tropical themed beer would be a nice way to kind of acknowledge ska's Jamaican roots.
Yeah.
The other beer I brought is by Mason's Brewing Company. It's called Hipster Apocalypse. The reason I got it is the can art features a skeleton on it that reminds me of the dude from the Boss Tones that wore the skull mask and danced around.
Nice.
But not only that, I think generally it's got the art has a punk rock aesthetic to it. Yeah. And so I thought this in combination with the tropical theme beer was a nice way to pay tribute to the merging of the ska and punk genres, which defines...
That's so deep.
Yeah. I put way too much thought into this. I have nothing else going on in my life, Rafi, besides beer and music.
It
so.
Certainly seems that way.
All right, let's crack these.
Let's do it.
Bad boys open.
All right.
I didn't even mention what style these were. This I'm going to start with the tropical one. It's a Berliner Weiss, actually. And then the other one's an IPA.
There we go. Ah, standard beer.
Oh my God, this is delicious.
Really?
The passion fruit is like the thing that stands out the most. It reminds me of a passion fruit soda I used to drink growing up in Portugal. Do you want to try it?
Yeah, sure. What the hell? Oh, wow. That's... Ugh. I'm sorry. It's
too
not
tart.
Bad. It's just, yeah, really, really tart.
All right. Well, let's get into it, I guess. What band do you want to start with?
Yeah, sure. So, I think this has probably been so the Mighty Mighty Bosstones was what we're going to start with. They've been a huge part of my my ska years for a few different reasons. First, I mean, obviously growing up in Boston and having that sort of allegiance to Boston bands. They stood out as one of the big ones. But I think the Bosstones were probably one of the biggest, it propelled me into wanting to do my own bands the most, I think. There was versions of like our first bands where we, I don't know if you remember, I don't know if you were in this band, but we had, one of Nate's friends that didn't really play an instrument that was literally in the band to dance around just like the Bosstones. Like that was the big thing, right? So the first song we're doing is a song called He's Back. I love this song for a few different reasons. I mean, when you think of the Bosstones, you really think of, I think, a little bit of ska, but a lot more gruff to it, right? And this is one song that I think captures that so perfectly. The intro and then the chorus is very like in your face and like kind of rough. But then the verses like is just, as you can hear now, it's just really, really pure ska, kind of feel to it. It also, just real quick, this song and then a bunch of other Bosstones songs, you mentioned my first band, The Discordants. It really taught me a lot about like writing in this type of genre, because I hated doing upstrokes, right? Like the class... I wasn't very good at guitar like back in the day, right?
So that's not an intuitive thing on guitar. Like,
sure.
That's not how your guitar teacher's not teaching you how to do upstrokes.
Right.
Like, in that same way.
Exactly, right. It is truly like its own thing, and that's why it makes it so, like, ska so distinct, right? But this song and a bunch of other Bosstones songs taught me how to utilize, like, another thing like the horn in a verse to sort of take away from that need of an upstroke, right? Like, they were the classic, like, the horns would do the upstrokes while the guitarists would just play straight power chords.
Oh, interesting.
It's really
cool.
So that's why we're doing the Bosstones. But
any other songs of theirs you want to highlight?
Let's do Everybody's Better just real quick. It was a later song, and I think after they sort of really, really owned the scene, this was kind of in their later albums when I think a lot of people start to say, they're not really the Bosstones that everybody knows. And you can really hear it, right? Like, it's
his
very,
voice became
very
more polished.
Yep.
And, yeah.
I think this was, either post Jimmy Kimmel or like right at that time where he started doing that.
Jimmy Kimmel?
Yeah, Dickie Barrett's the announcer for Jimmy Kimmel.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Check it out. He's
Is
on
Jimmy
the show.
Jimmy Kimmel from Boston?
I don't think so.
Just
no.
Just for fun.
No, I think he just after the band, he just started doing that. So That's he's so like weird. the introduction voice for Jimmy Kimmel, and then he like, you know, chimes in here and there, you know what I mean? But anyway, I love this song. Like I don't care that it's not like the Boston's that you know it. It's just like such a chill, like good feel song. And
but this does remind really love it. This does remind me of some of the stuff off of the album that's got Knock on Wood and Rascal King, where it just they do have a lot of those chill, just vibing out sections like this. Even though they're and that's the other thing that I think sets them apart too is they're not like most of these. Unlike most of these bands, they don't feel the need to every single chorus go into power chords with distortion. Yeah. Like sometimes it'll be this same kind of style throughout. They don't. Yeah. They're fine maintaining that consistency.
Yeah. So. The reason I wanted to play this song, it actually segues very, very well. The horn player and one of the horn players in the Boston's during this era, and the guy that's singing with Dickie Barrett. So there's another guy that you can kind of hear singing along, and specifically in the bridge, he used to be from the band Spring Hill Jack. In fact, like I love this guy right here. I love the whole story of Spring Hill Jack. Like they were, like I loved them, and I think you really liked them a lot too back in the day, right?
Certain songs. I really only got into Jolene, but
Okay. I thought there was the other one that you liked, the pop song. In any case.
Yeah. It's been forever, so yeah. I'm sure there was another song or two that I was into.
Yeah, but it's really funny. Like Spring Hill Jack broke up after that one album, right? And if you want to move on to them, you're free to do it. We can start with Mass Appeal Madness. So they broke up, and a few of the horn players went to other established like ska bands and became their horn players. So the Boston's, like what the trombone player went to the Boston's, and then two of the other, or sorry, the saxophonist went to Less Than Jake, I believe, huh. And then one of the and then the trumpet player of Spring Hill Jack went to Real Big Fish. So it's really like cool. It's like, you know, they're
like
done with their own band. Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, and it makes sense too, because it's a really niche talent that you are not only good at a good horn player, but have experience playing in a ska punk band.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You're a shoe-in if another band is looking for
exactly
somebody.
Exactly, right. Yep. And I think you saw, typically speaking, I think in the ska band world, you saw the horn players sort of rotate.
I was going to say, I didn't want to like misspeak, but I remember it feeling like a revolving door. Yeah. Like no, it was never the same lineup. It was always like the same core, like rhythm section and singers.
Yeah.
But then the horns, they were like, who cares? It was probably whatever studio musicians they just recorded.
This is a stretch maybe, but it's just a hunch. Like I'm assuming what little money there was in these ska bands probably went to the songwriters, the vocalists, you know, like I don't think it was
thinking about it now, because I mean, just from our experience working in a band, we never really got paid. I think maybe like once or twice we got a paying gig, but dividing that four ways made it immediately worthless. Yeah. And imagine dividing that seven or eight ways. Like,
right.
It's insane. Like, any business person would be like, why are you doing this?
It's so true. It's so true. So Spring Hill Jack, funny story. Well, not funny story, but just interesting how I came about them. There was this random station on cable TV that I can't even remember what it's called, and I think it was around for like, it felt like 3 months, and it was sort of like a we want to compete with MTV sort of vibe. Like they did obscure music videos of these like obscure bands that nobody really knew, and Spring Hill Jack was on it, and that's how I actually found out about him, was through this like channel that was around for like 4 months, and they were doing the music video for Jolene, which I mean, it's a hilarious music video, first of all, but
I forget what the music video is.
It's they're driving around, and it's just like some goofy stuff, like what you would expect from a ska band, really. So anyway, but Spring Hill Jack, I just like it was. I I don't know. It was just such an enjoyable band for me. The album was great, but so yeah. And you know, one of the underlying things for ska for me, and it was more so towards, you know, the end of the era that I used to like it, was I really did appreciate great horn sections, right? Like people that could play it very well, and definitely think Spring-Heeled Jack had that. So,
and it sets those bands apart from all the different punk bands. That was like what was so exciting about having that, like, that new flavor as part of that same scene.
Yeah. So I think the next one that I'd want to talk about is another local band. So same sort of thing for me. You know, grew up liking them from the local scene and all that, and got to see them live. And they were never really big from a national level. I mean, I know they did tour a lot, and I think they're still touring, which is, I don't know. It's like, you know, why are you doing this? Yeah. Just like get a real job at this point.
Well, they probably all do.
Yeah, you might be right. I hate to rush to that judgment, but Big D and the Kids Table. This started, I think, the real, like, because, well, not transition necessarily, but like this segment, or this took me into more of the pop punk with horns kind of stuff for me. So Big D and the Kids Table, if you want to do Can't Be Caught, I think it's the first song off their Good Luck album. And so Big D and the Kids Table, the coolest part about it, outside of it being a local band for me, was very, very unique in the sense that, like, this isn't your, I mean, it's got the classic upstrokes, it's got the horns, it's got, you know, the dancing bass lines, like everything fundamentally to it is ska.
Sure.
But the talent behind this stuff, like the drummer, incredible. Like I remember, you know, discovering these guys and thinking like every single person in this band is like super talented. And it was during a time where I think we were like doing 100 bands with the same 3 people, and we could never find other people to join those bands, right?
I know it well, yeah.
So it was like just like such a jealous moment for me. Like, how did these 8, like, or I think there were even like 10 people, super talented people, come together? You know what I mean? Like, it was just such a
exactly
cool thing,
like,
you know?
the what are the odds, right, that not only do you get four, like a core of like 4 people who are great and like have the same goals and are committed, like that was so hard for us to do.
No.
And then do it like double the size of that,
exactly,
group.
Yeah.
Like that's insane.
Yep. So
and then it depresses you that they're not like household names.
I know, right? Exactly. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like I didn't look at Big D and the Kids Table as just like your standard ska band. It was just like there's so much more to it, and it was just like so enjoyable to like sit there and listen to it, you know. So that's, I mean, I think that's probably the big stuff for Big D and the Kids Table. Another band where, you know, you can listen to that whole album, the Good Luck album. Their other ones were okay, but I think Good Luck was definitely their best one.
Nice.
And you could just listen to it front to back and be impressed on every single song. So
cool. Who's next?
So transitioning, because I think this flows right into Streetlight Manifesto as my next band. So this band, again, I think was just super, super talented. I was telling you a little bit about like band politics and like drama that occurred with these guys, which I always think is like an added like bonus to liking some of these bands, like the whole Brand New, Taking Back Sunday.
Yeah,
you know, like it's kind of like cool to side with one of them, you know. Yeah. What I mean? Even though your opinion doesn't matter. So Streetlight Manifesto, if you want to do Everything Went Numb.
Some real farty horns right there.
Yeah, right. The funny thing about this band is it used to be a band called Catch 22, another really good ska band, I think, but I guess there was a falling out, and due to like rights issues with the song, like the lead singer who wrote all the songs had to leave the band, took a few people with him. And if you listen to the Catch 22 Keens to Be Nights back to back with this album, you're like, it's literally the same exact thing, because it's the same writers, you know, same core people. But then you start to get like some of that, like there was a song later on this album that you know, like makes fun of the other band and all that stuff. I thought it was really kind of a cool thing. But another great album, another great talented group. The one thing that I always found like weird about these guys though, and you know, the lyrics, if you like sit down and listen to, he's got a really like kind of messed up point of view, I guess. Like a lot of his songs are like, I think this one and a lot of his songs are, and I think I would like to think it's from a point of irony, but a lot of his songs are like super violent and like talking about like wanting to shoot places up. Like it's,
Jesus.
Yeah. It's not like, it's kind of awkward, but, so I always felt like super uncomfortable like with those lyrics, but, you can't argue with the music. The music's amazing. So, and yeah, why not? We can go to another one too. Point and Counterpoint is another, I think, just a great. Actually, I don't know why I picked this song with what I just said.
just another violent one.
Oh yeah, it was pretty bad. But fast forward, it is depressing as fuck. so it's another.
I was gonna say, oh, it's a slow one.
I just like. I really, really just do appreciate the music that these guys put out, and like if you just listen to it, it's so like such a like a punch in the face with different things happening all at once, but it's so like clean and tight, and you know, I've heard live stuff from them too, and I've seen them live, and it's like perfect on stage, you know, and I've always had a respect for bands that can do that, as you know, so
yeah.
So that's Streetlight Manifesto.
I never really listened to them or Catch 22 that much, but like what I do remember from Catch 22, this is like you said, exactly
it, right? So why don't we move on to do you think we you want to go into honorable mentions or you want to finish up? Well, actually, there's a band here that I guess I have to talk about because it started the ska stuff for me, which is Five Iron Frenzy.
Yeah. That'd be insane if we didn't talk about Five Iron Frenzy.
Yeah, exactly. So, I was telling you a little bit before, like, it was incredibly hard to pick a Five Iron Frenzy song to play here because they were, aside from, like, their first album, they weren't very, like, ska. Like, you know,
they were, like, the quintessential punk rock with horns.
Or yeah, exactly.
Or even, not even punk after a while.
Sometimes, like, rock with horns. Yeah, exactly. So... But I did pick a couple songs from their first album, which was still like during the times that they were super ska. So Cool Enough For You is one of my favorites. I actually didn't get into them with this album. I got into them with the next album after this, but, obviously this is the next one that I like to listen to. And, so I don't know, just really great. Like your classic ska stuff. I can't have a discussion about ska without talking about these guys. They're certainly the ones that got me into it. So
I love how much they innovated and like their fans stayed along with them.
Yeah.
And they get some of their stuff borders on like prog rock, even I would say. Like they have some really experimental chord changes and key changes, and they almost, even though they were never really like scream heavy, almost borrowed from post-hardcore sometimes in their later albums. So they're definitely really, really an interesting band. And always, we talked about this, I think, on the Christian Rock episode, but always had like so much respect in the scene from all the bands that they toured with.
Yeah. And so I think the thing that's, it's funny you mentioned the piece about like fans kind of evolving with them. There was one album, so each album got like progressively closer towards like just rock, right? And then their last album, they kind of kicked it back into, or second to last album before they broke up the first time, got him back into like a pop punky feel. But so we had Nate Sellers on a previous episode, and I remember like every time they would come out with a new album, like me and Nate were like beyond words. We were so excited about, you know, like, you know, opening it up and listening to it for the first time. And so they had one album where they just went full rock on you. Like it went from like decent pop punk where you could still like be a member of the scene and like enjoy it, And then just the next album was like totally different. It was an album called Electric Boogaloo 2.
Oh, yeah. That's the one with like Juggernaut on
it.
And
it was like a complete like turnaround for what their writing style used to be like, right?
And, I remember feeling like another band we were really into at the time, Sam I Am. Like, yeah. It was almost that style of alternative rock.
Sure, yeah. And I remember sitting, we were at Nate's house, and I remember like opening the CD up for the first time, popping it in, and we were just like looking at each other like, what the hell is this? Like, it was very, very difficult for us to get into. I would tell you now, like, that's probably one of their best albums, in my opinion, because it was like they just threw out the ska, threw out the pop punk, and it was like, we're going to write what we want to write. You know what I mean?
Which is, there's something really cool about that, too, because nobody was doing that style of rock music with horns.
Yeah, exactly.
And the horns really do add so much. Yeah. Like, you, I think probably the reason more rock bands don't integrate horns is because it's so much of a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Like, to find people to do it, to write arrangements and all that kind of stuff. But if you're already doing that and you evolve to a new style, having horns really enhances the experience and they like know how to use them.
That's so true. And it's what I've always appreciated about these guys. Like, that point right there is they, you know, you usually have bands that will, you know, they'll come up with cool harmonies and then that'll be their thing. Or they'll have a guitarist that can like shred and that's their thing. They have one focal point of what the band is.
They have a gimmick or a signature
move. Right. The cool thing about Five Iron Frenzy and the thing that you just kind of said was like they shared that space so well with all the different pieces of that band. Like, it was a band that had two guitarists, which you usually don't have, right? Because you're usually either going to have the melodies with the horns or the melody with a guitar, right? And if you want to pop on the Old West, it's another cool song to kind of focus on, but they were just a band that would always do, like, every part of the band would share some of the cool things together, you know what I mean? And really complement each other really well. So that Five Iron Frenzy. And then, you know, I've talked about this on past podcasts, but I mean, Five Iron, Mighty Mighty Boston's, like, one aspect to these guys that I didn't really talk about was the lyrical stuff behind it. Like, I really appreciated that. I mean, Five Iron was super goofy with certain songs, right? But on some of their other songs, and you want to kick it off to Fahrenheit real quick? I know we just started Old West, but
Sure.
I don't know if you have it, but this song is like a great example of that. They're not like afraid to get deep into certain things. Like, this one's about Freddie Mercury, and I actually heard him tell the live story once, like at a concert of theirs. Like, he struggled so much with the fact that like Freddie Mercury came out, you know, as a homosexual and all that, and like initially because of what he was taught, it was like such a hard thing for him to grasp. But then like the song kind of progresses throughout like the verses and the chorus to talk about like how like none of that should matter. He's still a person, like all that stuff. And I just really, really appreciated that about like Five Iron and Mighty Mighty Boston's. They weren't afraid to get into some of like those issues that like people were just dicks about, you know, and kind of just tell it as it is. So,
and then on the goofier side, like I just really appreciate that because, especially at this time, this style of music wasn't like that serious. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so
it was nice
to see these bands
It
was nice to see these bands not be like fucking Bono and like not taking themselves too seriously.
Right.
Blink 182 obviously really led the charge on that on the pop punk side.
Yeah.
But I mean, all of these bands, they sound like the soundtracks to a 90s teen movie, right? You know what I mean? Like, so it makes sense that they wouldn't like be overly serious about themselves.
Yeah.
So I love that they can like goof around and have like silly songs.
Oh,
like I mean, it's, I think ska is like the perfect party music. And
it
so
really is.
Why shouldn't it be goofy and fun?
In fact, wasn't there, I can't remember which one. There's a teen movie from back in the day where there's like a party scene. Like, they go to somebody's house for, was it 10 Things I Hate About You? And there was that band that had like, elements of ska. It was a girl lead singer. what the
I think,
was
yeah,
this?
Letters to Cleo?
Yes, yeah.
10 Things I Hate About You, Kay Hanley comes on stage at, like, the prom or something like that.
Whatever it was, but there was, they were playing that, that's what it was, you're right, they were playing that dance, and, like, it was, like, a ska band on stage kind of thing, it's kind of cool, but...
And it was big at the time, like, right. Clueless, I think the Mighty Boss Tones are in that movie.
Yeah, I think you're right. Or a song of theirs, I think, was, but...
I think they're, like, at a concert at one point. I could be wrong. I could be misremembering.
It
was, like, it was a big part of youth culture at the time, which is too bad. I'd love to see, like, there's definitely been a revival of pop punk. Or, I mean, some people might say it never really went away, but there's, like, a new crop of pop punk bands that I think are incredible, like the Wonder Years and Knuckle Puck, and I'd love to see a similar ska revival alongside it, but I don't know. Maybe we'll get that, maybe we'll start it,
who knows. Music is cyclical, right? I mean, this stuff, I wouldn't be surprised if it did one day. But so how are we doing on time? I mean, I had a couple honorable mentions that I can just throw the names out, or if you want to listen to a song or two.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe we'll do a song from each of those honorable mentions.
Yeah, sure. So, and these are honorable mentions in the sense that, like, I can't not talk about these guys. I think most people in the ska scene would relate ska to these bands, so it's hard to, like, skip over them, which is the first one's Less Than Jake. I mean,
of course,
how can you talk about ska without mentioning Less Than Jake? So Less Than Jake, I mean, a lot of their early stuff was identified very well with a lot of ska bands. I actually liked some of their newer stuff more. So if you want to throw on Silence Is Selling Yourself Short, like, I love this song. It's just, like, the perfect feel, like, you know, of what you'd think a ska band is. And it's not really like Less Than Jake, you know, as you would know them. But
yeah, sounds more like a Boss Tone song than a Less Than Jake song.
Yeah, at least the later stuff, right? The newer stuff, rather. Less Than Jake, I mean, again, everybody, I think, liked them in the ska scene. Another band. I mean, I don't think anything they did was, like, super crazy talent wise.
Yeah,
I mean, it was good, and I remember, like, really respecting the bassist as a bass player myself. And
I remember loving Hello Rock View back in the day.
Such a great album. Yeah.
Well, I revisited it, and I just feel like it doesn't hold up as much. Like, the songwriting's not quite there. It's got, like, a great energy to it, but it's just not polished from a songwriting perspective. Yeah. And but so there's some great songs on that album for sure. Scott Farkas takes it on the chin. Such a ska banger.
Yeah.
And then, anyway. And they just nail the transition or the coexistence of the fast ska verses into the full-on punk rock choruses well. And they have a really distinct horn sound, too.
Yeah, because I think it was, like, I know way too much about this stuff, but, like, you know, the classic, you know, lineup you have is, like, one trombone, one trumpet, one saxophone that gives you a good range of all the different, you know, octaves and all that. I remember Less Than Jake was, like, their signature thing was two trombones and one trumpet. So you had a lot more of that, the farty sound, like you mentioned.
But I felt like it made for a very full horn sound. Like, it almost sounded like their horns were always playing power chords.
Yeah.
Like, that's how...
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they would have the two trombones really, like... complement each other with, like, different, you know, octaves and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So really cool stuff. But kind of going on in the same theme of, like, just bands you have to mention, Real Big Fish. These guys, like, I think they're your
they did not take themselves seriously at all.
Exactly. One of my favorite things with Real Big Fish to do is, like, listen to their live album, because it has a lot of those elements. But anyway, why don't you throw on She Has a Girlfriend Now, which is one of my favorites. I mean, just right away you can hear, like, the goofiness in this song, you know what I mean? Real Big Fish is definitely a band I've always enjoyed, just, like, the live aspect of it. I've seen them a couple times live, and they're just a blast to see. They're actually really, like, funny. It's not just goofy. They actually do this pretty well, you know. One of the things that I love that they do, actually, and I kind of wish we played some of this instead, but there's this song that they do called Suburban Rhythm, and on their live album, they they play it like in 10 different styles, where it's like different styles of music, and I just think it's so like clever that they do so well. But yeah, I mean, this is like, you know, you got to talk about Real Big Fish. You just have to.
Yeah, of course. They are the epitome of the goofy party rock ska band.
Oh yeah, yep.
They have a song, like their flagship song is called Beer.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I was talking to you
about a sick guitar player too.
Oh, he is. Yeah, he's incredible.
It's probably some of the more guitar work driven ska music out there. Like just a ton of guitar solos and riffs and
it's like I've always had like respect for guitarists who can do crazy stuff while singing at the same time, and like he has no problem doing this stuff together while really being versatile in his singing, I think. So,
and drunk.
Yeah, probably half the time. For sure. So that's Real Big Fish. I mean, how can you not talk about him, right?
Sure.
And then the last honorable mention for me, I would like to think that most people in the ska scene like these guys, but I don't think they're as popular as Less Than Jake or Real Big Fish was, but Mad Caddies for me was definitely one of those awesome bands. Again, very, very talented. Why don't you do one shot? I think that's probably a good one to... actually, this is a little slower. Do the other one, Machos Nachos.
Make up your mind.
Sorry. This was another album that I just remember like listening over and over again. So talented, I think, and like they aside from the song we just listened to, I mean they had like that
super
in your
energetic,
face, like yeah, energetic kind of feel to it. So this was one band that I wish I got to catch live, and I never got to, but because I wanted to run them through the test of like, can they do this shit, like, you know, without a studio, you know, all that stuff. But
we just did we just talked about this on a live albums episode we recorded, where live records are, or seeing a band live kind of fucks with you a little bit, because you can lie to yourself and say they must have just done that 100 times in the studio and that's how they nailed it.
Yeah.
But then you see that band live and you're like, damn it, like I gotta get better.
Yeah.
But, you know,
or the opposite, you know, like
well yeah.
I've only seen them like I think I saw them twice, but one band that I always, and I think you're gonna punch me in the face for saying this, you might disagree, but Third Eye Blind was one that I didn't think they held up live. I thought they had issues like the couple times that I saw them, like couldn't really hold his vocals or anything like that, but
not
that this is a live album episode.
Yeah, right? Sure. But, I gotta step in and defend my boys.
Fine. I expected you to.
Yeah. Well, we saw them once together, I think we did, casino ballroom.
Didn't they play with Taking Back Sunday? I think they did.
Maybe.
It was such a weird lineup, I remember. And the guy like broke his leg or something and was on crutches.
It rings a bell.
Anyway.
But it was, Hampton Beach, right?
Yeah, the casino ballroom.
Yeah, I remember that show. And that was the worst that I've heard them sound.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it was that it was like super loud and, and they played all like their new stuff, and it was like one of those kind of experiences. But I saw them at UNH when I was in college, and it was like the best show I've ever seen.
Really?
They just did pretty much everything. They did pretty much everything off of their self-titled, and then like the best songs off of their third album, which I really like.
Yeah.
So it was, they just knew exactly how to build their set list for their audience, and they sounded great. But I could definitely see them being hit or miss. I mean, they're notoriously like a drug-addled band, so
yeah, true.
It would not surprise me to know that like they'd get up one night and knock it out of the park, and then another night and it would suck. Also, I just think their new stuff gets worse and worse.
Yeah.
So the more that creeps into their set list, the harder it is to enjoy the show for me.
Yeah, for sure.
But enough about Third Eye Blind's live performances.
I guess that gets us through
your honorable mentions. I do have a drinking game queued up for us, but anything else, any kind of final thoughts on the genre, what it means to you, any of the bands?
I think I can definitely look at, you know, ska in general as being one of the biggest movers for me in terms of like where I matured and sort of in terms of music. I mean, a lot of those bands like that we talked about were sort of vehicles for that, right? Like Five Iron was in one that I've been on for God, how many years? I don't even know. And they've taken me through different genres, different stages of like my personal maturity in music and all that. I'm not afraid to like listen to rock music, which I think back in the day I would have been like, there was that whole like, that's not a cool genre. Like you got to like pop punk or, you know,
cause it didn't feel as underground.
Exactly. Right. But like, you know, that was, I guess that's the only thing I'll say about it is I think, you know, you can talk about pop punk. We talked about it last time, right? No, 2 times ago. You know, you can talk about pop punk as being like influential for you, but at the same time, I think ska was the one element for me that just took me in different places that I don't think I would have gotten
into. It's more eclectic sounding, exactly. I could totally see that. All right, well, let's get into the drinking game here. Today's drinking game is called...
Do I make you horny?
That's right. I'm going to play a series of 9 horn parts from songs by famous ska bands.
All right.
And for each one, you're going to have to tell me what band played that
song. I think I'm going to nail this. I really think so.
So I went pretty obscure with some of these.
Maybe not.
You would know all these bands, but I just don't know that you'd know all these songs. All
right.
So if you're ever like... stuck, have no idea what band it is, I'll give you multiple choice.
Okay.
All right. You're ready for your first...
Let's do it.
...track.
I'm going to say Real Big Fish.
It's not. It's Safe Ferris.
All right. Okay.
So take a drink. I forgot to mention the drinking rules. If you get it wrong, you take a drink. If you get it right, I'll take a drink.
All
right.
Yeah. Maybe I won't kill this then. I was never big into Safe Ferris, so that's my excuse. But that I was trying to go off of like what the horns actually sounded like. But anyway.
Listen to those horns.
Yeah. Where the hell are
those? They're coming.
I don't think this is right, but...
Do you want to take multiple choice?
Yeah, sure.
I'm going to say it's either the... I'm going to say it's Mustard Plug or the Aquabats.
It's Mustard Plug.
Correct.
I'm glad I took it. I was going to say Bucko 9, but they're sort of in that same realm as Mustard Plug, so glad I did that. Cool. All
right, next one.
I feel bad because I was going to get it wrong, but then I heard the vocals for a split second. So I know it's
that,
not.
That gave it away to you?
It didn't give it away. It just gave it away that it wasn't what I was about to guess.
What were you going
to
say?
I was going to say Less Than Jake. Man, I can't even tell you who
you
that voice was.
You want multiple choice?
Sure.
Goldfinger or Mighty Mighty Boss Tones?
It was Goldfinger then, yeah.
It's Boss Tones.
Really? Wait, hold on. Play that again. Let me hear the voice. It wasn't the... Oh, weird. Oh, geez. Didn't sound that way in my headphones, but that's weird.
All right, you ready for the next one?
Yeah. I'm really digging this. I don't know what it is, but I'm really digging it. Let me do another multiple choice on this, or am I out?
No, you can do another multiple choice. So let's say it is either The Voodoo Glow Skulls or Real Big Fish?
So I was going to, I was actually going to guess Real Big Fish. So I'm going to, but I don't think it's that. I think it's actually Voodoo Glow Skulls, but I'm going to say Real Big Fish.
You're actually right.
Yeah. All right. Good. Sweet.
All right.
What album is that? What song is that?
It's called The Fire, and it's from an album called We're Not Happy Till You're Not Happy.
All right. I was digging that.
Yeah, so that's what I meant by obscure. I went with some like later albums and stuff for a few of these because I knew if I just did songs you know, you'd
Fair
get
enough.
It immediately.
Fair enough. It's less than Jake.
Yeah.
You can tell by the what horns. I was talking about earlier. Yeah. Like that's such a, it's multiple trombones.
This is a split second.
Yeah.
That's all it took.
I don't know this one. Let me get multiple choice for it.
Let's say it's between Springheel Jack and Catch 22.
Then I would say Springheel Jack.
It's Catch 22.
It's the new Catch 22.
Yep.
The shit that okay. All right. Okay. That makes sense actually.
Take that drink.
Yep.
This is hard. This is a hard
it
game.
It is. It is. And for those of you who think I'm cheating with multiple choice, to be fair, I'm taking sips with every one of these. So go screw yourself.
Yeah, I'm refereeing.
I know this song. Oh, man, I know this song. Oh, what the hell is it, though? Oh, man. Is it Buck 09?
No. It's the OC Supertones.
Oh my gosh. All right. I didn't think you would have the balls to throw that in there.
The balls?
The balls.
I'm going to say of all these bands, they hold up the least.
Yeah, fair enough.
They're also the
most,
'cause
they
like,
went into like ska rap for like an album or two.
Yeah, and I just they also like they have some butt rock like vibe to them sometimes.
Sure.
And also they're just so overtly Christian.
Yeah.
And that, I think even for Christians, that's like easy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep, for sure.
Anyway, we got two more here. Here's your second to last one.
I'm going to say the Planet Smashers.
Ooh, that's a really good guess.
Is it right?
It's the Aquabats.
Okay. In the same vein, so I don't hate myself for that one. Was that pre or post Travis Barker?
Oh geez, I have no idea. This is I never really listened to the Aquabats. This is from 1997.
I think that's post, right? When did he join Blink-182?
Probably about
actually,
that time.
No, yeah. That was probably right before, actually. Yeah.
Your very final one here. I don't think you have any chance of walking away from this with a W today, but
that's all right.
But just for fun, we'll do this final one here. I was gonna say the name and artist. That would have been dumb.
I know this song too. Ah, man.
All right. I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
I've used them as one of the fake out answers already.
Okay. Voodoo Glow Skulls?
Correct.
Nice. Yeah. A little bit more punky to it, so yeah. All right.
All right, so not bad. I have no idea how many you got right and how many you got wrong. But
I think
seemed
I got
like a lot
right.
of wrongs.
Yes, I think I got one right.
And I think that gets us through the episode. Anything else to mention or plug for yourself? Any creative stuff you got going on?
No. Playing a lot of drums lately, which is
oh yeah, you mentioned
with.
That.
Yeah.
You have an electric set here in the house?
Yeah, and then I have Nate's drum set too, but I feel weird playing it just because I've been burned by neighbors. Yeah. So, but I'm having a blast with it, man. I'm still not like rhythmically like, you know, elite, but you know,
elite.
Yeah, like I mean,
aim a little bit lower. Yeah, well,
all right, I can't like I'm not keeping a straight rhythm in most of the stuff that I do, but I'm having a lot of fun, and for the first time, I can actually do like fills and stuff. Which
it'll be
I
cool
never
too.
Was
you can
to
like
do.
Start recording your own stuff.
Yeah,
at that point,
and that was the reason I wanted to get good at the electric set on purpose, because you know you can record that a lot easier than an acoustic set. So
I'm definitely jealous. I wish. Well, you know what? I can't say I'm jealous because I just don't have the motivation to do it. I wish I could play drums.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
Because I just, whenever I do my own recordings, I just program the drums and it's not, obviously not the same.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's cool.
Yeah. But other than that, I mean, no, I'm about to have a second kid. So that's
that's
think,
right.
Yeah. Creativity is, I've been saying this the last
get it out of your system.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's going to take a big break pretty soon. So, yeah.
All right, well then I'll just do a quick plug for the Wasted Minds website, wasted-minds.com, and for the Drinking Buddies Kickstarter campaign, which will be kicking off in just another month or two. So if you go to wasted-minds.com/Kickstarter, you can sign up for the campaign mailing list there. We'll keep you in the loop around all the latest there in terms of some of the gaming festivals we're going to, when the Kickstarter campaign goes live and all that. Other than that, I think we're done here. So to everybody listening, here's to you.
Cheers.